Welcome to the Iron Basketball Podcast, the Pick and Roll Podcast. I'm your host, Zach Carford. Jumping Jimmy Herbs. James Herbert back from Vancouver, Canada?
Canada, yes.
Okay.
It is still in Canada.
Still in Canada. They didn't move it.
No. Long time no pod, Zach.
Long time no pod. We've had people, at least two, asking where you've been.
Wow. All two people.
Minimum two. One, we were talking about this before where someone like tweeted us both asking about it, and then I remembered someone tweeted me about it without putting your Twitter handle in it. Hey, what happened to James? It's possible
they meant the same person.
It might have been the same person. They also might have been talking about LeBron James. I don't know.
But yeah, what happened to that LeBron?
Yeah, guy? I don't, like LeBron, and I just don't talk anymore.
Weird.
Yeah, it is weird.
I'm glad to be back, though.
Great to have you back.
Vancouver is a very pretty place still.
I've heard it's lovely.
And it was nice to cover a training camp. Like, I haven't written the Raptor stuff that I'm working on yet, but, you know, there weren't a ton of media there. Like, there were the beat writers and some local Vancouver media, but I think it was just a different kind of feel than covering the team at home. The players, I think, are a little relaxed, and, you know, they're forced to, like, actually spend time together, and they were talking about how that brought them closer together, and I think that's why you see teams going to, like, Hawaii or going to wherever, and the Raptors have the luxury of there's this facility in Vancouver that they've used for the past three seasons that's really incredibly nice. It's called the 40th Center. I think they're probably just going to keep doing it there every year because the players seem to love it, and the media obviously enjoys it too.
So, you know, I think that's an interesting thing, though, and it's something that we don't I don't know. Like we kind of get snarky about it. Shocker that we would do that. But like, just as a collective, it's like, oh, this team went on a trip together, so now they're like closer than ever, kind of thing. And that stuff actually does matter. Like even the Heat going an hour up to Boca Raton and just staying in like the Four Seasons there, and not like having access to like cars. Like they have to go on the bus together. They have to eat together. Like that kind of team building does really matter because some of these guys don't really know each other all that well. Like, they know of each other, but to get that kind of unity, you do need to just spend an obscene amount of time together.
Yeah, and I think during the year, a lot of them, like, it depends on the team. I mean, the Raptors are a bit different because Damari Carroll described it as, like, sort of like a college team. Like, a lot of the players actually do hang out anyway. A lot of the players are at sort of similar stages in their lives, like, and they've been tighter than a lot of other teams, but a lot of other teams, you know, these are veteran guys, and some of them just have their own family lives, and they don't need to spend a lot of time away from the court, and this kind of fosters a little bit of that early in the season, where it's kind of easier, and when there are new players who are trying to integrate themselves into the kind of culture of a team, and learn who everybody is, and as players and as people, and I think, yeah, like, there's a good reason why, like, probably half the league is doing this now. And it does make sense. And if you have a team dinner every night, then it's kind of, even if you don't want to get to know your teammates, you kind of have to.
Exactly. It's like the old saying goes, it's cliche, but if everyone eats together, someone's got to pass the gravy.
Exactly.
That's what that means. I guess, I mean, sharing is caring. I don't know.
I feel like that's
a thing. So you're like really optimistic about this Raptors team.
I'm becoming more optimistic the more, you know, I've only seen the one preseason game, obviously, which, because the game last night in San Jose against the Warriors wasn't televised, but the more I was kind of around them and hearing what they have to say and, like, kind of what I've heard about how the scrimmages are, I mean, I think they're going to be just a ton better defensively, and that's just huge with this team. Even if they take a step back offensively a little bit, I think just based on the fact that they're putting guys like Biombo and Corey Joseph and Damari Carroll into the rotation. And Carroll is obviously the biggest name there and plays the biggest role because he's the guy that's going to guard the opposing superstar on the wing every night, as opposed to having DeRozan or Ross try to do it when they're kind of undersized. I think that changes everything. And I think in addition to that, they're playing a very different style of defense. You could already see it. Mm-hmm. Against the Clippers there, I think we had a discussion, and I definitely talked to Matt about this at the end of last season when the Raptors were swept, and talking about their defense and what went wrong, and like part of it was personnel, and like their backcourt was just letting guys waltz into the paint a lot. But also, like, maybe they could stand to ice a pick and roll every once in a while. And they've made Valanciunas' job a ton easier. He's dropping back most of the time. And they are icing pick and rolls on the side. And it just seems like their system is going to be more conducive to their personnel this year. And it seems like the personnel also has just gotten a huge boost based on the moves that they made in the summer. And we talked about this when we talked about the Raptors offseason in general, about how they're trying to change the personality of the team and they're trying to have it more reflect what Dwayne Casey wants to do, because he's always been a kind of hard-nosed defensive guy. And I think it's super early to be making projections, but I'm pretty optimistic about at least where the focus is. And I could see this team being better than last year just based on the fact that even though they lost some scoring punch with Lou Williams, I just think what they've gained defensively could be so much more meaningful.
Well, that, it's kind of an interesting thing, too, of like, you know, Dwayne Casey's always been this defensive guy, but the way they play defense was kind of confusing. Because, yeah. Like, you have, all right, defensive-minded coach, the defense is inconsistent, the defense, like, seems to be proper or improperly, like, loaded up against plays like the pick and roll and stuff. And it was, I don't know, like, he had a system, and he clearly has a defensive mind, but he wasn't adjusting it to the personnel. And that's such a weird thing, and, like, and if they do start, you know, icing more pick and rolls and pushing them to the side instead of letting things, you know, hedge and then have to have a gigantic Lithuanian recover slowly against these things. Like, you know, I mean, they did well. Like, according, and this is a little tricky in terms of the tracking because it's not always perfect, but Synergy had them against pick and roll ball handlers defensively as 12th in the league, which is good. It's not bad by any means, but against pick and roll big men, they were 22nd. Like, they just couldn't cover that role, man. Yeah. And even just, like, taking that way for even, like, two more seconds by forcing a baseline, having your defense set up in better help, I think that, you know, just shaves so many opportunities for the opposition off of that game plan, right? Like, it just, if you take away, you know, a point and a half or 2 points a game strictly by playing the pick and roll defense better, your defense just skyrockets just off that one adjustment. And I think that I just think that this could be a huge thing for them with what you're describing. I still don't know what that means for them in like the grand scheme of the East and you know how good they actually are. They could still, you know, be a really good regular season team and then end up not being good enough in the playoffs just because of the personnel, but I at least like the strategy of it better from what you're describing.
Yeah, I think, well, when you're talking about the playoff regular season thing, that's sort of what Casey's big thing is. Like, at the end of last year, he was saying, you know, they took a lot of quick shots, and they were okay being an offense-first team because it was working in the regular season, but he was worried all along that it wouldn't translate. And it didn't translate. As soon as they were playing against that Wizards team, their first and second options were often taken away on offense, and they didn't have that defense as kind of a backbone or as anything they could, like, fall back on. When the offense fell apart, the team fell apart, and I think they don't want to be like that this year, and they think that will make it easier for them to have success in the playoffs. And I mean, another thing is, I mean, the big story around this team, I wrote about it on Media Day, is just look at Kyle Lowry. Like,
he's tiny.
We've never seen him like this. This is his 10th year in the NBA, and
he's a small man. He looks like a
different person. He is, compared to before, he is absolutely tiny.
Yeah.
He's still apparently able to take contact, which is a good thing, but I think the whole point with him is if he can remain as effective as he was early last year, if he can just stay healthy and stay on the court and stay quick defensively, because he's always been a good and smart defender, but I think last year when he kind of lost some of his conditioning and he was dealing with back issues, he became a much less effective defender in the second half of the season. And if he can get back there and if he can also be the offensive player he was, then that's huge for this team. And he looks a lot quicker. It's not like he's going and dunking on people now or like he's a completely different player, but he looks really different, and he I mean, in that Clipper game, he basically took over in that third quarter and he looked unstoppable. And I realize it's preseason, it doesn't really matter, but I think from what everybody is saying about how he's playing in the scrimmages, all signs are that he looks like he's as effective as he was when he was one of the best point guards in the league at the beginning of last season. And he also is just obviously in way better condition than he's ever been in his career. So if he can have a career season, if he can make the All-Star game again, and if the defense can be better, then I mean that's why there are some people, including myself, who are optimistic about the team.
I think that's the interesting thing about him too, is that I think a lot of people forget that the first 3 months we were trying to figure out, all right, should Kyle Lowry be starting the All-Star game over John Wall?
Yeah.
I mean, even though like the voting was supposed to come into it, like that was kind of our question of like who was more deserving. That's how good Kyle Lowry was in the first half of last season. And then it got wiped away by, you know, he was banged up. He didn't play well. His defense was bad the second half of the season, especially in the playoffs. And he just got eaten alive. And he just couldn't be that player. And so this is going to sound like – I don't want to sound like the best wordsmith ever. But
you don't want to sound like the best wordsmith.
Yeah, his strength has always been his strength. Like, he's just – like, guys just bounce off of him. And if he can keep that while being slimmer, quicker, which should, you know, help – the nagging injuries not be so prevalent. Like he may have, I don't know, like a Kyle Lowry renaissance or something. Like, I don't know. Like he could have an incredible season. And then, you know, if he's able to do that and stay healthy and be that impact player for a full season, and you have Damari helping out defensively the way he needs to, you know, I'm not a huge DeRozan guy, but maybe that moves DeRozan's role into an easier one, and one he can be even more effective to where he has the best season of his career.
Yeah, I mean, it's a big season for DeRozan too. This is a contract year for him.
Yeah,
I think his job is already easier just because Carroll's there. But yeah, he doesn't like hearing that he can't shoot threes. He likes to say that, you know, he has that in his game, but he prefers to drive and get to the line. But I think.
Now, I'm going to respectfully disagree with that.
Yeah, no, but I think from his comments, there was a story. Eric Kareen did a story for the National Post on DeRozan a few days ago, and it seems like DeRozan's at the point where he knows he has to shoot more threes, and he has to convert them at a better rate. I think he was making some progress, and then last year the percentage went down again, and he didn't shoot many of them. And I think they're at the point where he kind of realized that he has to be more of a catch and shoot threat. We'll see if it translates. I know he worked a lot on it in the summer, and it's funny, like you go in, if you get, like, I saw it sometimes at the end of practices last year, and I definitely saw it at the end of some of these training camp practices where they let you in, and DeRozan's going around the perimeter, and the shot doesn't, it's not like a beautiful three-pointer, but like the form is better than it was a couple of years ago, and he's making them as he goes around the arc. And I think he has put more time into it than people know, and if he's able to become even a little bit of a catch and shoot threat, then that will change how teams have to guard him, and that could make him a different player. I don't know if he can make that kind of improvement at this point in his career. Most people probably wouldn't bet on it, but I think it's worth noting that he's always been a super hard worker, and he has generally gotten better every year. And you know, this is a contract year. This is a big season for him, and I think a lot of these guys are embarrassed about the way that last year ended. They had much higher expectations and getting swept by the Wizards and getting just dominated by John Wall and Bradley Beal. And they believe that they can be a lot better than that, and they should have been better than that last year. And I think they're not really being talked about as one of the top teams in the East. And maybe that's good for them because they didn't handle expectations super well last year, especially in the second half. But I think the pieces are there for a more balanced team, and a team that, even if they're about the same in the regular season, and I think they could be better, but even if they're about the same, I think if you go into the playoffs with this roster, you'd probably say they're more equipped to handle a team like the Wizards or any of the teams they could face in the playoffs, just because they're more balanced than they were before.
Yeah, and that's an interesting point about him just being a threat as a catch-and-shoot guy. This last season, he took 1.5 threes a game, shot 28%, which is just putrid, but he didn't shoot a lot. But he did take, of those 1.5 three-pointers a game, 1.1 of them were catch-and-shoot threes, and he shot like 30%. which is not,
and from
which
the
is,
corner, it wasn't that bad either. Like,
yeah,
from the corner, he was okay.
Yeah, which is not good. But 2 years ago, he had his best shooting 3-point shooting season of his career at 30.5%, which is still really bad. But he took over two catch and shoot 3-pointers a game and was 33%, hit a third of them, which is still not very good, especially for catch and shoot. But even if he's like 35% on a couple attempts a game for catch and shoot threes, that's at least enough of a threat that should, you know, eventually the defense in the scouting report will kind of catch up with that, and then guys will be like cognizant of it. And if you even make them hesitate, you know, for a split second with him, just on that shot, then he can, you know, his athleticism can take over and he can do a lot. So that's what I mean. It's just such an important part of his attack. Even if it doesn't mean he has to become Klay Thompson. But you just have to be, resemble a threat out there, and he's never been that threat. But but if he can be, you know, if he can even just be a mild threat there, it just opens everything up.
And the other part of that is, like, he should have, theoretically, he should have more good looks from there because they have more guys who are willing to move the ball and who are good passers on the team. I mean, Damari Carroll, I don't think he's thought of as, like, this amazing passer, but he's a really good ball mover. And even if you look at what happened with the Hawks in the playoffs last year when the pressure was kind of turned up on them, like, he was often the guy who would take the ball and go around a screen and find an open man. And I think apparently in these scrimmages and training camp, when he's on the floor, the ball movement just gets better. I think, you know, Patrick Patterson is probably going to start at power forward, but even if Scola starts at power forward, like, both of those guys, they can pass the ball, they can move the ball. And I think they're what the Raptors want is less isolation this year. That's what everybody is saying, and I think there will still be some of that because of their personnel, but I think it'll be less than last year. And I think if you have an offense that moves a little bit better, and the offense was really good last year for the most part anyway, but if you have an offense where the ball is moving a bit more, then you could have more good looks for DeRozan on the perimeter and more opportunities that are set up by other guys rather than having him with the ball with 15 seconds on the shot clock trying to, like, break down his defender. And he can be a more efficient player if, you know, Damari Carroll's sometimes creating looks for him and Kyle Lowry's creating looks for him and things like that, because I think just overall they realized that even though the offense was efficient last year, there were changes they wanted to make on that end as well. And it's not just about getting better defensively.
So I guess the big question in the room with this Raptors team is, will Dwayne Casey, Liet Tuva, Jonas play fourth quarter minutes?
Ooh, Liet Tuva.
Yeah.
How
about that for some segue?
Will. Yeah. that was another thing I wrote up on Media Day, because Casey brought it up. Like, the funny thing was, he brought it up unprompted. Like, it was in a different question, and he just kind of went in a tangent.
He tried to 8-mile everybody by throwing out all the shots already.
Exactly, he totally 8-miled it because he knows he got a million questions about this last year when he was playing Amir Johnson over Valanciunas in the fourth quarter, or even playing like Chuck Hayes or Tyler Hansbrough over Valanciunas in the fourth quarter. And Valanciunas wants more time. I think a lot of Raptors fans want to see him get more time, but the issue was defensively he hurt them a lot of the time. That's what a lot of the defensive changes, like, that's why they were made. And I mean, they also have a new defensive assistant coach on staff, which is Andy Greer, who was with Thibodeau in Chicago, and I think that's obviously a good thing for this team. It'll be interesting. I think Casey's saying that he'll play fourth quarter minutes right now, but he's also raving about Biyombo with the second unit and saying he's the best talker on the team.
Oh, no, I see where this is going.
We'll see. I think Valanciunas will play the fourth quarter minutes, but also I think it is worth noting that KC seems to be in love with Biyombo.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know. Like, I think Valanciunas, it's weird because I've always said, like, you should earn those minutes, right? Mm-hmm. Like, you should earn any minutes you get on the court. And I have no problem with young guys doing that. But it did seem like, I don't know, at the same time, it seems weird that he just automatically goes away. Now, it makes sense. Like, if you're going to play Amir Johnson over him last year in fourth quarter minutes, that makes sense to me. Amir Johnson's a better defender.
Mm.
But it also, I don't know, like, maybe there's just these glaring holes in practice. But it just seems to me like you got to give Jonas a chance at some point to prove that he can do that. And now they don't necessarily have that safety net. They were a full point and a half better defensively with Jonas on the bench last year. Mm-hmm. But they were also like almost 7 points better offensively. Like there's got to be some kind of balance there. And I know the fourth quarter ends up becoming like a slow it down defensive battle, but I think you got to roll it out there. And I don't know what you just said about Biombo makes me a little hesitant to believe that that's going to happen.
It's funny. Like I think Valanciunas, like he took a lot of criticism for his defense, and he's not a bad rim protector at all. It's just when he was out on the perimeter, he just didn't have the speed. And
right.
He couldn't quite get to where he needed to be. And I think he knows that. The team knows that. That's been their whole thing with trying to develop him. And I think the plan is to have the scheme kind of cover for him a bit more. And I think that's what they're doing. And we'll see if it works. Casey had a great quote on, I think it was on Media Day, when he said, you know, the Raptors have brought in all these two-way players. Masai did a great job. I mean, Damari Carroll's a two-way player. Corey Joseph's a two-way player. Biombo, I don't know if I'd call him a two-way player, but he rebounds and protects the paint, so that's two ways. Casey is not going to put Biombo out there for his offense. They know what Valanciunas can do, and he was one of the better post-up guys in the league last year, even though he can turn the ball over sometimes. So they want him out there, and I think as long as early in the season it's not too bad, then they'll give him a chance to keep that role. I think it'd have to be sort of similar to last year. I think there'd have to be like a big statistical difference between when he's on the floor and when he's on the bench in a bad way for them to be like, okay, we're gonna go with Biombo over him, unless there was like a specific matchup or something that dictated it.
Yeah, I mean, you're right. Like, he is a very good rim protector. He allowed 46.5% at the rim last year on 8.1 attempts per game, which is
He's long.
Which is right in line with what Hassan Whiteside did, with what Tim Duncan did, with what Timofey Mozgov did. Like, they all have basically the same percentage on almost the same number of attempts against them. Like, I mean, he can definitely protect the rim. It's just, can he cover? Can he get to the rim in time to cover? You know, and that was especially the issue with their pick and roll defense, like you talked about. Like, you know, he has to be in position in order to be that effective player, and him learning how to consistently be in that position, because that was the thing too when he was coming out of Lithuania, that it was like, this guy's a defensive guy, right? It's because he could block shots and he was a good rim protector, but we all thought like, all right, he's gonna be this mobile guy, and he's just a little too slow in the NBA, and he hasn't been able to make up for that, and he keeps getting bigger. It seems like every summer, like he's putting on more and more muscle, and maybe that's slowing him down as well. I don't know.
Yeah, I think that's definitely part of it. As he came out, and people were comparing him to Joakim Noah, and he was pretty skinny back then. But the idea was, well, he can cover a lot of ground, and he plays really hard, and he does play really hard. But I'm not sure whether it was just that he never quite had the quickness at the NBA level, or it was that once he put on the muscle that he put on, which is, as you said, really significant, that he could no longer do that. But I think he needs to have that size to take contact in the paint and rebound, because I mean, this team doesn't have a lot of good rebounders right now. That's their biggest weakness that we haven't really talked about.
Yeah,
is that they don't have a lot of good rebounders, but they need him. Like, that's part of why he can score in the post, is because he's so big and strong. But they also need him to be able to help him recover a little bit better. And I think they're trying to make his job easier. But also, they had him working with like a running coach last year. Like, it's not like they don't know this is a problem.
Yeah.
They just gave him this big contract, and this is kind of the year where he's supposed to play in the fourth quarter, and he's supposed to be their anchor.
Yeah.
And with this new scheme, we'll kind of see how it works.
His stats are like his individual. I mean, I know it's just individual stats, but his individual stats are really good.
Yeah.
His per 36 minutes are 16.5 points, 11.9 rebounds, 1.6 blocks. You know, 57% from the field, 78% from the free throw line. Like, he produces. It's just, does he make the team better? Like, there is some, you know, obviously he has more of a sample size than Hassan Whiteside, but, like, there is kind of that similarity in a way of, like, you know, Whiteside blocks more shots, but, it, like, these guys produce in a limited number of minutes. And it's just, can you justify that they make the team better enough to give them more minutes?
Yeah, I think every year, especially since he had that Summer League MVP.
I was there. That was my first Summer League MVP vote was for him.
There you go.
Yeah, that was a big moment in both of our careers. We're linked forever.
I think ever since then, people have been kind of being like, this year is going to be the Valanciunas breakout. This year is going to be the breakout.
Yeah.
And I think last year, his minutes were actually a little bit lower than they were the year before. So it was seen as a disappointing season. But I actually thought he made a lot of progress as an offensive player last year. And that does matter. It's just
definitely
he was always billed as this defensive player. And they're still kind of waiting for him to be that, even though he is capable of affecting shots around the rim. And this is a coach that often gives playing time based on how you play defense. Not always, but that really does matter to him. And I think that's basically the reason why his fourth quarter minutes have been limited. But it could change this year. And I think, honestly, like that's of my concerns about the team. Like, Valanciunas' defense isn't like at the top of the list, because I do think that they're doing what they can to cover for that now in terms of the way that they're playing. And I think that'll become more clear as the preseason goes on. We can actually see the games. But from everything that I'm hearing and from the little that I saw, it looks like they're delivering on what they've been talking about.
Yeah. And all right, you can take these stats for whatever big grains of salt you want. Like 20.6 PER, like 0.189 win shares per 48 minutes. Like, it's weird. Like, he just has these really good statistics.
I mean, that's why he got $64 million,
yeah.
Right? Like, he
is actually good. It's just, you know, is he good for the team? And I mean, I don't know. I'm still a believer. I still think he's, you know, maybe I'm just talking myself into it because I like him. But I think he can play.
Yeah. I think he can play. He has some weaknesses defensively. You'd want him to. I mean, they talk about wanting him to talk more and,
yeah,
like, everything that we've discussed with just his quickness level. But, I mean, he's young, and he's 7 feet tall. He's legit 7 feet. And he's been a hard worker the whole time, and I think he has developed pretty nicely. He just hasn't quite developed in the exact way that everybody thought that he would.
How has been your week-long being around Bruno?
I actually had, like, a 10 to 12-minute discussion with him, which is the longest interview I've ever done with him.
That's great.
I've never seen anybody talk with him for that long. His English has gotten a ton better. Like, it's just completely different.
Yeah. I can tell from the Instagram videos. Like, mm-hmm. he's definitely more comfortable with it.
He's more comfortable in general. You know, he's obviously still raw, but, I mean, the tools are there from what we've seen all along. He's just extremely long, and I think as a defender, that kind of surprises some people. Like, he came in against the Clippers in the first quarter and, like, immediately blocked a Lance Stephenson shot. And he's not super assertive yet. I mean, he's hardly had any NBA experience. He hardly even had any D-League experience last year. So he's not exactly demanding the ball, and his teammates weren't exactly looking for him either, at least in that first game. But, you know, I think his shot looks really smooth. He's gotten a little stronger. He's still pretty skinny, but he's also really young. And this year, to me, he should spend basically the whole year in the D League. If you talk to him, he says, you know, his goal is to, like, be an NBA player and play minutes for this, like, main Raptors team. But if he's in the D League, then he understands and he knows that he's going to spend time there. I think the only question is, will he spend, like, a full 50 game season in the D League? And I think he pretty much will. But yeah, there's not really a lot of room for him on the rotation here. Like, I think he'd have to show something really significant that we hadn't seen yet, and he'd have to go and, like, dominate the D-League or something for that to happen. But I think they can afford to wait with him. And from everything that I hear and everybody I talk to, he's one of the hardest guys the hardest working guys that people have been around, and that's the important thing when you're that young, is that you're actually focused, and it seems like he is.
Much in the... Who was the guy... Was it Woodrow on The Simpsons who wrote to Marge,
yes,
like, yours is a butt that won't quit?
Yes.
That's how I feel about his wingspan. Like, yours is a wingspan that won't quit. Like, it's just... He just looks fake on the when you watch them in a basketball game. Like, that's a weird, like, it's also one of the highest compliments you can pay a guy. Like, you just don't look real.
No, I mean, his wingspan is, like, almost Gobert's wingspan.
Yeah.
And he's, like, 4 or 5 inches shorter. Like, yeah. It's really crazy. And that's why they picked him where they picked him, and that's why he has a really high ceiling. It's just, it's impossible to know right now whether he'll actually reach it, but I know everybody seems to be happy with him. It's just, I think it really hurt them that they didn't have a D-League team last year. I think that just would have been really big for him. It would have been big for Nogueira, too, who barely played for the Raptors last year. And those two guys, I mean, you might have, like, a sneak peek of what the – this is sort of spoiling something that I'm writing, but, like, you might have a, like, sneak peek of what the Brazilian national team is going to look like just by watching this Raptors 905 D-League team this year.
So you also saw the Clippers, and Matt and I talked about this a little bit, but, man, I don't know about this bench.
Really?
Now, granted, their bench sucked last year.
Yeah.
And that's even with Jamal Crawford, who you know I love. But they were...
What do you think about Jamal's hair? He has hair now.
I'm not a fan. It's throwing me way off. I don't know what to think.
I'm, like, really not used to it. Like, seeing it in person was jarring.
Yeah.
He looks a lot older with it, which seems, like, a little bit confusing.
Yeah, he does look... He looks both younger and older at the same time with it, which is I don't really know how to describe. But when I saw it, I was like, "Did you get younger while also aging a lot?"
yeah, I get that.
It's confusing. I don't know. I love Jamal. I've loved him since the Michigan days.
Mm-hmm.
I think Slam Magazine got me really, like, excited about his time at Michigan, because he was just kind of this folk hero in high school basketball. And then a couple years ago, I lived in the same building as someone who played on the Michigan team with him.
Mm-hmm.
So I heard all these stories about it. Like, I just, and then, you know, it's the exact style of play I love. Like,
mm-hmm.
flashy handles, ridiculous shot making, just fires it up kind of blindly sometimes. And that just entertains the hell out of me. But he was bad last year. Like, he was really bad last year. And to the point where he couldn't save their bench. And their bench was the 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, the 8th worst scoring bench in the league with Jamal Crawford on it. Like, that's kind of astounding.
I mean, that bench was just, like, atrocious last year.
They were tied with the Wolves in terms of bench scoring.
Yeah.
Which is unbelievable. and they were the third worst shooting bench, fourth worst shooting bench.
Yeah.
Just barely ahead of Philly. Like, that's how unproductive they were. And now, you know, now Austin for a full year, whatever that means. I got Lance, who's going to be on the, you know, be kind of the key member of that bench. Josh Smith.
I mean, I watched a lineup. I tweeted about it when it happened because I was just like, this is so weird. They still had Pearson there, who started that game. He came off the bench in the second game. It sounds like they don't know whether he's going to come off the bench or not. But I saw a lineup where it was Rivers, Jamal Crawford, Lance Stephenson, Paul Pierce, and Josh Smith.
Yeah.
That was their five. And
it's so weird.
It's just, it's so strange. And, like, it's kind of hilarious and fun because, I mean, there was some weird stuff going on with Lance Stephenson when he was trying to dribble the ball. and there were a couple of errant passes thrown by a few different members of that lineup. Undoubtedly a talented group. It's just, I don't know if that's going to be, like, an actual second unit or whether they're going to mix and match more, because there's not a lot of spacing there necessarily, and there's not a lot of passing there necessarily, even though we've seen, like, you can get a fancy pass every once in a while from, like, Josh Smith or Lance Stephenson, but I'm just not sure how that group really functions. I'm not sure that group is one that is going to, like, that the guys are really going to make each other better, despite the fact that Pierce is typically a good ball mover.
I would kind of expect Pierce to, even if he doesn't start, to play more with the starters than he does this bench unit.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, I'll still think Jamal's going to be the best player on that bench, but, like seriously, Cole Aldrich might be the second best player. Or the second most important player, if we're counting Pierce as, like, really playing with the starters type guy. And I don't know, like, you know me and Josh Smith. Like, I'm just not a fan anymore.
Mm-hmm.
I think he's awful. And I think he's been awful for years. And he had a little bit of a renaissance with the Rockets, and maybe that gives you hope of
I certainly don't think he's awful defensively.
Man, I do. I think he's really bad defensively.
Really?
Yeah. I don't think he's a saloon door. But I don't know. I don't think he covers ground anymore. I don't even think he's that good of an on-ball defender. I think he can make a couple of plays here and there, and maybe that's all you need out of him, but like, he's not a guy you can really trust.
I mean, he's very inconsistent. It's weird because he ended up helping the Rockets beat this Clippers team. Like, they wouldn't have done it without him.
Right, yeah.
But, I mean, there are other games where he just, it looks like, well, what does this guy have left? It's really strange. But
I think it embodies him and their bench. Like, there's talent. There's no denying there's talent. It's just, does it work?
Yeah, we'll find out. I think on paper, this is an improved team from last year.
Yeah.
I think that's kind of obvious just based on how bad the bench was last year.
Yeah.
And, I mean, maybe they'll miss Matt Barnes a little, but I think having Pierce mostly negates that, especially come playoff time when Pierce will be able to handle bigger minutes if we're assuming that he's going to be rested throughout the year. We talked about this before. Like, I really like what they did in the offseason just because it seemed like they had no options, but they somehow got these guys.
I liked it too, and then I saw them on the court together. I was like, oh my God, what happened? this is such a weird, like, group of people to put on a basketball team together.
Yeah, it is really strange.
It was one of those things where you saw the individual moves, you're like, oh my God, this team's stacked. And then you see it on the court together, I'm like, what the hell? Like,
no.
This is dizzying.
It's even weird just going in the locker room and being like, okay, so there's like Blake and Chris Paul and DeAndre, and then it's like Lance Stevenson and Josh Smith are like walking around. Like, it's a really odd group.
Yeah.
I mean, they're mostly veterans. It's not like they have a ton of young guys or they completely change directions. Like, probably the youngest guy who's going to be in the rotation is Rivers, right? And I just think it's weird because, like, their backup center is, I guess, Josh Smith or Cole Aldrich. And then their backup point guard is, I guess, like, Rivers and Prigioni might...
See, I like Prigioni.
Might have some minutes.
Like, I would trust...
It's just,
I would definitely trust Prigioni out there.
Yeah, I mean, I think he needs to play just because he can actually move the ball.
Yeah.
And he can create opportunities for other people, and they're going to need it. And he can also hit a spot up three. But, yeah, it's just... It's a strange group. I think it's hard to tell if the playoffs were starting now, like what their like 8 or 9 man rotation would be, and how exactly it would work.
But maybe I think a lot
of these guys think they should be playing big minutes. Like, it's hard to tell Jamal, like a six man of the year award guy. Like, okay, so Lance Stevenson is now going to be our bench scorer, and then at the same time, it's hard to tell Lance Stevenson, well, you're not going to have the ball in your hands,
right?
And Rivers thinks the ball should be in his hands too, so. There are a lot of guys that are kind of similar. I think that's why all reports were looking to trade Crawford, and that didn't happen. And maybe there will be more moves to kind of balance this team out over the course of the season. But as it looks right now, like it is definitely a strange thing to watch.
Yeah, especially like Austin Rivers. You know, he's better than most of those guys on that Team USA
squad, totally.
Right? So
absolutely.
He's got a lot to prove.
Yeah,
I mean, and maybe, all right, maybe it's overreacting, like, or maybe it's thinking too much of the bench. Maybe all the bench has to do is get them to the playoffs, right?
Yeah.
Like, allow the guys to be rested, and then you play them bigger minutes in the playoffs, and that's the luxury they didn't have last year. I don't know if that's why they fell apart or whatever, or maybe they're just, you know, quote-unquote mentally weak or whatever cliche you want to throw out there, but it just, like, whatever reason it fell apart, and it's not like they're going to throw out this second unit in playoff games for 15 minutes.
You know, yeah, probably not.
It'll be staggered and stuff. And so maybe that's overlooking or overvaluing too much of what a bench does, and all they have to do is get them to the postseason.
I mean, they should still have an awesome starting five.
Yeah, starting five. Like, even like if it's Wes or if it's Paul Pierce, like, whatever it is, like, those other four guys are just ridiculous together. I don't think it really matters who the fifth guy is.
And Blake was, like, bringing the ball up the court sometimes in that preseason game.
Yeah.
DeAndre looks awesome. I mean, he probably still can't shoot free throws, whatever. Like, he's finishing crazy alley-oops from Chris Paul. And I just, I think, as we saw last year when they beat the Spurs, it's just like that starting five can take you a long way. And we can debate how good the bench is all year long. And I think that that will matter some. But it's hard to know exactly what they have there until we see it in the playoffs. And maybe it changes a little bit. But I think, yeah, there are questions about how this thing really fits. But, I mean, this is still sort of at least a fringe contender just based on the strength of their starting lineup as
well. Oh, for sure.
So I think they should still be fine. Like, they should still be very happy with how the offseason went, even though, yeah, like, I mean, we'll be watching these Clippers, these late night Clippers games, and there might be second quarters where you're just like, what is happening? and I think their hope is that just the amount of talent will mean that it's not what is happening, like, oh, the other team's on a 10-0 run, like there was, like it happened often last year. But I think, yeah, they'll have to kind of learn each other and learn who kind of is playing with whom and who's going to score on that bench and who's going to get the big minutes. Because, I mean, maybe they end up saying, okay, Prigioni's going to play, like, 18 minutes a game, and, like, Rivers kind of plays some nights and doesn't others. But, like, that's his dad's decision, you know?
Right. That's a weird thing, too.
Yeah.
So we both watched some Kings-Blazers last night.
Yeah, that was some messy but fun basketball.
Messy but fun basketball. Someone said, hey, how'd the Kings look last night? I said, a beautiful mess. And they're like, perfect. That's exactly what I want to hear. It was, man, that's a weird team. You know,
there were stretches in that game where it felt like there was a turnover on like six possessions in a row.
Yeah. I mean, they had 23 turnovers last night, and that feels low.
Yeah.
Like, it really did feel sloppy. Rondo was interesting. Rondo was like kind of all over the place and looked like a rookie at times and looked like a savvy veteran at times. It was just chaotic. I went to bed like towards the end of the third quarter. So I missed the Bellinelli explosion.
Yeah, I missed the beginning of the game. So between the two of us, we saw the whole thing.
Yeah, I think they were down like, I don't know, 16 or 17 or something like that when I went to bed. So then when I woke up this morning, I got a tweet from Matt because we did the gambling lines yesterday, mm-hmm. which was an experience.
Yeah, totally.
And he was like, he's like another effing push. And I was like, who pushed? Like, who? And I was like, oh, it must have been the Warriors Raptors. But no, it was the Kings Blazers. So Kings made a crazy comeback thanks to Marco Bellinelli.
I mean, it was just like watching Eurobasket. Like, sure. Bellinelli just went nuts. Like, he hit every shot and he was making these like contested leaners, some of them from three, some of them from like 18 feet. He just kind of took over. And I think he had 10 of their 12 points in overtime, and he had like 13 in the fourth quarter too. Like, Collison was really good in the fourth quarter as well.
He looked great from what I saw.
Yeah, and I think, and he played a little bit with Rondo later in the game, which was interesting. I think that's something Carl said they would do. But yeah, I mean, Bellinelli is a weird player because he'll go games where he's just kind of invisible and he'll miss some shots, but then sometimes he'll just get like super crazy hot and they'll just give him the ball. And I think, you know, he's a guy that I think will probably close a lot of games, even if McLemore's a starter, and he'll probably bail them out at the end of the shot clock like 10 to 20 times over the course of the season. Maybe that's conservative. But yeah, it was a weird game. The Blazers were playing a lot of guys who like won't even be on the team. But I mean, that's standard for preseason. It was weird. It went to overtime, which I think all the writers were really mad about, but I mean, that's kind of funny to me, whenever these meaningless games go to overtime. But yeah, I think we can lift our ban on Sacramento Kings talk because we have actual basketball.
We talked about them for like 8 straight episodes, and then it was just, I can't talk about them anymore. But now we've actually seen this weird group of people on the court together. I don't have any more clarity. Like, it's just a preseason game, but I don't have any more clarity about what this team should be. I do know I really don't like DeMarcus Cousins shooting threes. Because it's just, like, you're a monster. Go be a monster.
Yeah, I don't have a problem
like facilitating from the elbow and stuff like that, but like, just you don't need to take threes. Not everyone needs to have a complete all around game where you can be a scorer from everywhere. Like, just go eat the paint.
Well, my thing is, like, if he had that all around game, then that'd be fine. But I just don't think the shot's good enough.
Right? Yeah, I don't either. But like he like and he looked great. He had this one I vined it. Like he had this one in transition like twisting step through thing. Yeah, like step yeah. through move where he moved the ball over the defender and like twisted layup that was just no man that size should be able to move that way.
Yeah. No, he's incredible. They I mean it's like we said, they have a lot of talent on this
yeah.
team.
Just, I like Kufos.
Really strange, yeah.
Rudy Gay maybe had the, like, at least from what I can remember, like, one of the worst games of his life, just the way he played. It's not even that he was 4 points on 2 of 11 shooting, like, he just made horrible decisions.
He took some weird shots.
Yeah, and it, I just, you know, you probably just chalk that up to preseason, because it's preseason, but, yeah. But that was weird to see him. Yeah, Collison looked great. Here, I have a theory on Willie Cauley-Stein. I think he has terrible hands.
Terrible hands?
Terrible hands.
Wow.
I noticed it in Summer League, but it was just kind of like, eh, it's Summer League. Like, maybe it's just chaotic or whatever. And then, well, now it's preseason, so maybe it's
chaotic.
Just, yeah, maybe it's just chaotic preseason. But, like, I don't know. I feel like he missed some rebounds because he couldn't grab it, and it rebounds he should have had. I feel like he bobbled or missed some passes because of that. And so, like, I don't think it hurts him. Like, I don't think he's Kwame Brown by any means, where it's going to ruin his career. And I also wonder if that's something you can truly work on, or if that's just, like, an inherent thing.
I mean, there are drills that the teams use to work on that.
Yeah, there like certainly are. I wonder how like effective those actually are. Yeah. But his activity is incredible, and you don't need to catch a ball to throw it into the third row on a, yeah, no, like when you block a shot. Place. Yeah, and so I think he'll be fine, even if he has bad hands his whole career. He may not even have bad hands. Maybe just I caught him on wrong days. But
I thought it was funny. Like I read stuff this week about like George Karl says that like Cauley-Stein needs to be in better shape, and like Cauley-Stein admits it or whatever. And then I watched the game, and he's just like
he was all over
running up and down the court like crazy.
If that's him in bad shape, I yeah. feel bad for the league if he gets into good shape because he's going to be everywhere.
Transition. Yeah, he was all over the place. I thought he looked really good.
Yeah, I thought he looked great. I really did. Like aside from the hands, like I thought he looked great.
And you know, I think that's. I mean, that's an interesting decision that they have to make. We talked about it a little bit before. Is like, how much is he going to play? How much is... I mean, obviously, Cousins is going to get a huge share of minutes, but, like, what do they do with Kufis and Cauley-Stein and then, like, potentially playing Rudy at the four, yeah. right? Like, that's... We'll see what they do there. But, yeah, I thought that was encouraging for, like, a first preseason game is sure. that he just seemed to be playing really free and he was really changing things on defense, which is what everybody, like, kind of knew that he would do. But Portland was actually interesting to me.
Portland was crazy interesting.
I think I'm going to watch them a lot on League Pass, even yeah. if they, like, win, like, 25% of their games this year or whatever. They have a lot of fun players. Like, I kind of, like, I always liked Ed Davis. Like, I was always really intrigued with Vonleh. Mason Plumlee is a pretty good basketball player. Myers Leonard developed into a pretty good basketball player last year. And, like, Harkless was always a guy that people wanted to see play more, and it seems like they'll get their wish now. It was weird, like, Tim Frazier was, like, draining three-pointers. I don't know if that's a thing that can
yeah,
keep happening.
Yeah, he hit, like, a fadeaway one. You probably corner. Weren't watching yet, but, yeah, he hit, like, a fadeaway one in the corner. I was like,
yeah.
At first I was writing up, like, our Elite 100 thing, mm-hmm. so I wasn't totally paying attention, but I kind of caught it out of the corner of my eye. I was like, oh, Damian Lillard just hit a ridiculous shot, and I was yeah. like, wait, is that Tim Frazier?
No, it looked like a Lillard shot.
Yeah.
Like, Tim freaking Frazier, who, like, could never really shoot threes, but... I mean, he'll stay in the league if he can do that. But, yeah, like, I kind of like this team. Like, I don't get me wrong. I don't think they're going to be good.
But they're watchable.
But I think this could be a really fun team. And you even saw, like, even when they had lineups with players, like, they had, like, at the end of the game, there's, like, this Omari Johnson guy who I'd never seen play before.
Couldn't talk.
And Pat Connaughton and a few other, like, Phil Pressey and Tim Frazier were playing together. And even with, like, this, like, random group of players, they were, like, really moving the ball around the perimeter and swinging it around. Like, Terry Stotts gets his teams to play pretty offensive basketball, you know?
Yeah.
So maybe they can overachieve a little in that regard. I have no idea. But I do think, you know, I'll be watching Blazers games this year. I think they could be, even if they're nowhere near the playoffs, and I don't think they will be, they could be kind of interesting.
No, I agree. Like, I'm intrigued by the whole, like, Mason Plumlee, Myers Leonard, Noah Vonleh, Ed Davis thing.
Yeah.
And we didn't
They seem to be just kind of, like, platooning them.
Yeah, which is smart. Like, go throw them out there and let them have equal shares, and let's see who can, you know, kind of earn that lion's share of the minutes. Lillard was just ridiculous. Like, his numbers don't blow you away from last night, but I thought he was so good. And I'm kind of like, it'll be different because one, he won't be playing the Kings defense every night, and two, it'll be
some of that serious was Rondo who was like playing him well.
Yeah, it's in some, you know, it'll be much more serious attention in at game action in the regular season, but like he could have like a kind of a, it'll ultimately be like forgetful because they won't be good, but he could have like kind of a special season.
No, I think like for like fantasy basketball purposes, which we don't really talk about often on this show, but like. Like, draft him high. he could lead the league in scoring. Like, look at who else is on this team. Like, he's going to have to create so much.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I completely agree. I'm not sure I'd buy Mo Harkless. There was a point last night where, oh, man, I can't remember who it was. Maybe it was Blazers Edge or somebody. It was some Blazers fan, an outlet, was like, said something like, just remember... Or someone tweeted them, like, just remember, we got Mo Harkless for a draft pick Orlando will probably never see or something like that. And I was like, maybe calm down. Like, I don't think all of a sudden he's going to break out after just kind of existing in Orlando for a few years.
Yeah, I mean...
But I hope, I like him. I hope he does well. I hope he can find a role because it's wide open. Like, there's no reason Alan Crabb should be playing over him.
Right, and that's the thing. And that's the thing that I like about what Portland did is they just kind of... went after a bunch of guys kind of like him. Guys that weren't, they didn't have to sign to big contracts. And guys that are young and have room to improve. And they don't know if Harkless is going to break out or not. But it would obviously be a pleasant surprise if he did, and he's going to have the opportunity to.
Right.
And, yeah, I think after one preseason game, we shouldn't overreact to, like, anything, like, literally anything. Yeah, like, there'll be the opportunity for him, there'll be the opportunity for Davis and Vonleh, and, like, even, you know, like, I think Leonard and Plumlee, these are guys that, like, ended up carving out bigger roles than the other guys in terms of consistent minutes at the end of last year. I mean, Plumlee's minutes went up and down, I guess, because of that situation with the Nets, but, like, these are guys that have had a bit more of a taste of consistent minutes recently. But I don't think they're just guaranteed to be the starters or anything like that. Like, I don't think they're just guaranteed to have big roles. I think Stotts will kind of see what these other guys can do. And I think, frankly, like, if you look at Vonleh and, like, where his ceiling is, I think it's higher than most of the other guys. And I think maybe he has the longest way to go in terms of being consistent and productive. But if he has a good camp, if he has a good preseason, I mean, why not just throw him out there and see what he can do in a big role? I think it's just all wide open right now. You know, that's why they can, like, Portland fans can be pretty excited about this team. Even, like, you know, had they brought everybody back, they'd be sort of a fringe contender type deal. But, I mean, this is a very different thing, obviously, but it's also an interesting thing and a fun thing and a weird thing. And Portland's kind of a weird place, so it's sort of appropriate.
They love weird, yeah. James, before we go, I'm gonna extend the sadness to you.
Sadness?
As well. The sadness that Matt and I have enjoyed the last couple podcasts.
You've enjoyed, like, sadness.
Well, yeah, sure, why not? we're gonna pick preseason games.
Okay, let's do it.
I have lines. This line is probably not accept, or this book that I'm, this online book that I'm on is probably unacceptable to the betting community. But whatever, I've got lines in front of me. So the Wizards are, I think, at home. They're marked as the home team. I don't know where they're playing. They're 6.5-point favorites over the Philadelphia 76ers.
Do we know if anybody's being rested in this game?
in their first preseason game, I have no idea. That's what makes this so amazing.
Guys, like, Tyreke Evans was, like, rested for precautionary reasons in the Pelican first game.
Sure. Ricky Rubio sat out the team scrimmage last night.
Yeah. I mean, Lowry sat out the game yesterday against Golden State. You know what? It's preseason. I'm feeling crazy.
Ooh.
Going Sixers here.
Wow. All right. I'll go Wizards just to go against you on that one.
Going weird Sixers.
I'm going Whitman ball.
Whitman ball.
Yeah.
We'll see what Whitman ball is.
All right. The Indiana Pacers are possibly at the Detroit Pistons. The Pacers are 3-point favorites. This will be more of Paul George's speed with the small ball four because he's not going against Anthony Davis.
What if they are just like, all right, the experiment's over?
All right, we heard your complaints. We're now going to adjust.
Yeah, we've been talking about this since April.
Or what if they're just like, okay, fine, CJ Miles, you're the small ball four.
Yeah, CJ, you guard Anthony Davis next time.
So Ersan Ilyasova should be a much more manageable matchup for power forward Paul George.
Yeah, but I'm still going to the Pistons.
Ooh, I am as well. I don't like this preseason controversy and how it affects the Pacers on the court.
Yeah,
I think they're tearing them apart.
Yeah, they're clearly falling apart. It's just like a couple of years ago in the second half of the season.
Yeah,
where the team was just losing chemistry, just losing games.
It's just like that.
Just can't keep it together.
It's the exact same thing. all right, we've got. Your Milwaukee Bucks at the Chicago Bulls, possibly.
My Milwaukee Bucks. Yeah. This is actually at the United Center.
Okay. The Bulls are
actually, I think all of these games are actually at
their real places.
Yeah.
The Bulls
actually
are...
Actually, not the Celtics Olympia game that's on this afternoon, because that's in Italy.
Ooh, that's a good call. I don't even have that on there, which means we have to make up our own line for that.
Okay, cool.
So the Bulls are 1.5-point favorites against your Milwaukee Bucks.
I'm going with the Bulls.
Ooh, reverse jinx.
No, I'm just, this is me drawing a line in the sand right now.
Okay.
They're not my Milwaukee Bucks, they're the Milwaukee Bucks.
Yeah, I'll go Hoiberg ball in a debut.
Hoiball.
I'm in on that. The Houston Rockets are at the Memphis Grizzlies. The Grizzlies are 2-point favorites.
This feels like a playoff series.
It feels like a trap game.
Yeah.
It feels like a trap. I'm going Rockets.
You're going Rockets?
Are we giving Rockets 2 points? Please. Rockets are going to win by 25.
25?
Or a number. Maybe less than 25.
I'm going with the home team.
Okay.
I'm going with the Grizz.
The Denver...
Maybe it'll take a while for Ty Lawson and James Harden to learn how to play together.
Chemistry issues.
Maybe not the first preseason game is going to be where they figure it out.
Maybe they're going to put Paul George at the four and it's going to ruin their chemistry.
Oh my God, they could totally put Paul George at the four.
The Denver Nuggets are at the Dallas Mavericks. The Nuggets are favored by 2, possibly on the road with such a young team.
No, I'm going with the Nuggets.
Yeah, me too. I don't think the Mavericks win a game this year. I don't think they win a single game.
The Mavs are like nowhere close to healthy.
Right.
And they're weird to begin with. Moutier looked really good in his first game.
I like him.
Yeah, I'm all in on Moutier. And I'm all in on the Nuggets in this meaningless preseason game.
Okay, and then this afternoon... At 2:30 p.m. Eastern time, we have the Celtics at Olympia.
Yes.
Let's just say the Celtics are 6.5-point favorites.
Okay. Well, we know the Nets lost to Fener... I don't know if I'm going to say it right. Fenerbahce?
Someone corrected me from the podcast where we talked about yesterday, but I don't know where that tweet is.
Mm-hmm.
Ooh, man. Someone had it, too. Here it is. Fibonacci.
Really?
Yeah, that's how
like the Fibonacci sequence?
Or no. Oh, mate. Oh, wait, no. He was making fun of the way we were saying it. Maybe it was Fenerbahce. I read that wrong.
Okay.
Fenerbahce. And they're loaded.
Yeah, I mean...
Ekpe Udo, Jan Vesely?
Yeah.
Impero Antic didn't even play.
Yeah.
Neither did Ali Muhammad.
I am predicting now that Ekpe Udo will make his triumphant return to the NBA next year.
He should. He should be in there.
Yeah.
Remember how Ethan Sherwood-Strauss used to always just blabber on about Ekpe Udo's plus-minus?
I mean, I felt the same way, so I can't really make fun of Ethan
there. So let's just say Celtics are 6.5-point favorites against Olympia.
I'm going with the Celtics.
I got to see who's on Olympia.
I'm not sure it's anybody that you know.
Wow. Shots fired.
I mean, no, I don't mean that in a... I just don't... This is not...
Is it Olympia... Milano? Olympia Basketball Club? What are the odds that Wikipedia has their updated roster?
If it's Olympia Milano, then it is.
Ooh,
it will be people that you know.
This team is loaded.
If it's Olympia... I thought it wasn't Olympia Milano. Maybe
well,
I'm wrong.
If this Wikipedia page is correct, then maybe this is just all-time notable players? Oh, man. I don't think all these guys play for this team. It's like the whole team is the Argentinian national team. There's no way this is right.
Okay, I'm going to figure out who actually is playing here.
Oh, wait.
Milano, it looks like.
Okay, well, I was looking at the Argentina team, so that's why that didn't make any sense. Now I've got it right. Olympia Milano, current roster.
Yeah, it is. This is a good team.
Oh, Oliver Lafayette, I like him.
Yeah.
Alessandro Gentile is good. I know him.
He's very good.
Milan Machvan, he's a guy.
He's a guy.
Oh, I like Charles Jenkins and Robbie Hummel. I'm going Robbie Hummel.
So because of...
Because of Robbie Hummel's existence. Gani Lawal?
Keith Langford is on this team. He's been a...
Yo, this team
is
stacked.
Oh, wait, is Langford still on the team? No, he isn't.
No.
Sorry, I messed that up.
This team is stacked. Oh, man. I'm going Olympia.
You're going Olympia.
Yeah, they're at home, possibly. They've got Robbie Hummel.
They are
Hummel.
At home. Yeah. Celtics should be tired.
Celtics should be exhausted from seeing the sights in Italy.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe there's a little too much wine flowing in Italy.
There will probably be some wine flowing.
Yeah, there had to have been some. Yeah.
Some.
Give me Olympia Milano plus the 6.5. I feel great about this.
I'm good with the Celtics. I'm high on the Celtics right now.
Yeah, you are. Other people I've been talking to are also high on the Celtics.
All the advanced stats, people keep writing these things where they're like, oh, the Celtics are going to win like 50 games based on this projection.
Yeah, that's crazy because they have Evan Turner on their team, but... but they
I don't think they win 50 games, but I think they could be pretty good.
They do project really well. We're doing our over-unders this week or sometime. I don't know.
Yeah.
Matt and I are going to try to have the podcast for Thursday and Friday when we're doing our preseason meetings.
That makes sense.
And I have them, I don't know, I have them kind of low, and I may need to adjust this.
Maybe.
I just look at that team, I'm like, this is a 6-6 and under league.
You said that, but I mean, I think they have a couple, like, I think Amir Johnson is the best.
He's definitely over 6-6.
And, yeah, he's absolutely, I can confirm that.
You can confirm that. yeah, I think I'm going to have to bump them up some wins. I don't have them really low, but I don't have them all that high either.
Mm-hmm.
I also put almost no thought into this. I just tried to get it to the correct number of wins possible.
Yeah, I got to do that soon. That's always like a difficult thing for me to figure out.
I was 22 wins over, which I was surprised. I was so optimistic for all these teams.
Yeah, you're not that as much of a hater as you thought.
Yeah, I think Matt was like 40 something wins over. So
yeah,
I feel good about that. All right. Well, James, it's great having you back. I'm glad that you left Vancouver and that you came back to us. And
I survived the mean streets of Vancouver.
You survived the mean streets of Vancouver and the mean scenery? The meanery?
Yeah, the meanery.
The meanery of it all?
Yeah.
And I will actually see you this week.
Yeah.
Which is a great treat.
Pre-season meeting.
Great treat for both of us. And I will talk to you later.
Enjoy Robbie Hummel and Charles Jenkins.